Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to today's program at the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Dr. David K. Okola, and I'm the chairperson for the Personal Growth Forum and your moderator for today's event. We also welcome our radio listeners, and we invite our audiences to visit us at the www.commonwealthclub.org. And now, it's my pleasure and honor to introduce our distinguished speaker. Our topic, move into life, the nine essentials for lifelong vitality. Our speaker, Annette Beniel. I'm sure she'll correct me. Remember a time when you were bursting with energy, curiosity, and creativity? The Annette Beniel method is a cutting-edge technique that Beniel asserts will help improve physical and mental performance by training the brain to move, think, and feel in new ways. Beniel says her nine essentials will help you experience vitality at any age or condition based on brain plasticity science, awareness, and simple movements. I need a lot of help. Please help me welcome Annette Beniel.
Is there a way that I can be in front of this?
Yeah.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for being here and for taking the time to come to the Commonwealth Club and listen to me talk about my new book, Move Into Life, the Nine Essentials for Lifelong Vitality, and my name is Annette Beniel. All right? Okay. So I like to start by asking you guys whether anyone here could use a bit more energy, for instance, then raise your hand. Anyone? Great. Anyone? Let me put it right here. Anyone could use a bit more flexibility in your body or strength? Show of hands, great, terrific. Anybody would like to have a slightly better memory? I guess a lot of you. Anybody would like to be a bit more creative? Some of you. All right. So the first thing I'd like to say is that you can actually have all those things. And I know some people have said, are you selling snake oil? And I said, no, I don't know how to do that yet. How the way in which I do it and the people I train do it is actually by communicating, finding ways to communicate with the brain and get the brain to create new connections and new possibilities. So most people now are familiar with the fact that the brain can change itself. Are you aware of that? Yes, you've heard about brain plasticity and all that stuff. And until pretty recently, it was believed that the brain can only die down from a certain age on. Some people even thought it was from the age 5, but we wouldn't pay attention to those people. But the 20s or 30s, that the brain has one way to go, which is down. Now, this is true, but doesn't have to be true. So it depends what we do, and that's where the nine essentials come in. So it's an interesting thing how the brain has, when we are born, initially the brain has this enormous propensity, tendency, to grow and form new connections. I don't know how many of you know, but the baby, when it's born with about a fifth of the size of the final brain. And most of what we'll fill in those four-fifths are connections. And those of you who have children, grandchildren, you know that when the baby is born, it's pretty helpless and it can't do very much of anything that is voluntary. It all has to be formed. As we learn, we grow, the brain forms connections. The tendency of the brain is then to keep doing what it already knows to do, to keep repeating its own patterns. That's the formation of habits. Now, habits are terribly important. if we don't have habits or we lose our ability to do things that we have learned how to do and can repeat automatically, it can be quite devastating. So if you know anybody who's had a stroke, for instance, and there's a loss of a lot of those patterns and habits, it can be very, very devastating. So I'm a big fan of habits and of existing patterns. It's just that the balance between the tendency to repeat that was done before and to create something new gets more and more towards the repeating what was done before and less towards doing something new. And that's where my work, my method, and the book comes in to play. And the good news about that is that the brain actually, once we give it the conditions it needs to wake up and start forming new connections, starts doing it right away and very, very powerfully. So I've worked literally with people from a few days old, babies that were born with some issues. I work with the children with special needs, all the way to people in their 90s. And the speed of the shift is pretty much the same with adults as it is with little ones. Adults have more habits, so there's sometimes more to work through. But the changes in the rapidity of the shift in terms of a brain that sort of like is an automatic activity and sort of asleep to itself and to anything new, shifting that to a brain that is awake and processes information, generates new information, is pretty much identical in my experience between adults and children, which is very exciting. And so one of the ways that I like to think about the brain is like the CEO of our life. CEO. I usually say to people, say, what? CEO of our life. That means it's the big organizer. It's the big manager. It's in charge. And to a great extent, the quality of our life and the quality of our experience is decided by the quality of the functioning of our brain. And this wonderful scientist, some of you may know his name or know his program, Brain Fitness on KQED, Dr. Michael Merzenich. I got lucky enough to get to know him through my book, and we become friends, actually. And he says, yes, you can have a better, stronger brain. And essentials help build a better, stronger brain. So and we don't normally think of our brain as a good brain, medium brain, low quality brain, exquisite brain. We think of our muscles. If our belly's flat, we have a great belly, right? Or the color of our eyes. I mean, things that we can see, hear, and feel directly, we tend to give it qualities judge it by its quality, but the brain is sort of out there. It's in our head. We don't feel it. We don't see it. There's no way to feel the brain directly. So it's kind of like there. We know it's not too good when things don't work very well. Otherwise, we don't think about it. The reality is that our brain can really work at better quality than better than that, than better than that, than better than that. It's actually the one organ in ourselves that is built to improve upon itself. It's actually built to improve upon itself. And that is not really widely understood. So we teach, like in kids in school, we try to teach them to do mathematics, to learn history. But there isn't much talk or understanding about working with children and with adults on improving the quality with which that brain does whatever it's doing or whatever it's learning. And this is what I am presenting you today. And we'll talk about, you know, the essentials. And we have a stand that's supposed to show the essentials, and the person who knows how to do it is parking my car. So because the parking garage was full, and I said, come rescue me. Anyway, so I would like to do a small movement exercise with you here in the room if you're up to it. And the listeners, if they can do it right now, that's great. If not, it's very simple, so you can always do it later on. If somebody's in the car, don't try to do it when you're in the car. But it's so simple that people can remember, and it's also something you can do again later on at home. So if you don't mind standing up, it's actually, I'd like to do something with you in standing. Then if we have some time, I'll do something with you in sitting. And if you can just move to the sides a little bit, and so you have room to move, you'll be bending forward a little bit. And yes, just stand. How many of you somewhere during your life wished that you could touch your toes better? Raise your hand. I believe that human beings, for the most part, are born with a gene that says, I wish I could touch my toes better. I don't know why it's so general, maybe because it's a sense of flexibility, or in school we're told to do that and so on. I would recommend to not have a bag on or something like that. That would probably help. And now, simply, don't push or force very hard, but simply bend your knees a tiny bit, so don't try to keep your legs straight. It's not very important. And then just simply bend down and see how far you go down with your hands. That's all. That's great, and come back up. Don't bend your knees a whole lot, so don't squat, because then it's a different movement. It's a perfect movement. I can show you something about squatting, but that's not what we're doing right now. And now, bend your knees lightly one more time. Just check it one more time. Bend your knees and just bend down as if to touch your toes. But don't stretch, please. That's not a very good idea. Now stand up. And now what I'm going to ask you is to bend your knees and lean with both hands. I can show it only with one, but lean with both hands above your knees. And now all I'm going to ask you to do is to round your back and look down with your head. And then gently arch your back and look a little bit up. Kind of like a cat-like movement, but keep leaning on your knees with your arms around your back. And arch your back, free your belly, look up. And now stand up. We've just done two movements. Just wait 1 second. And now simply bend down again the same way you did. And see if you're bending a little bit better already. Anybody bending better? Yes? Some of you already. So let's just do something else. Come back up. Don't stay down there. And now lean with both hands just over your right knee. So both hands on one knee, one above the other. That's excellent. And again, round your back and arch your back. And that's excellent. And round your back. Look down and round your back. Round it. There you go. And then arch it a little bit. And do it one more time. Round your back and arch it. And now stand up and bend your knees just a little bit and bend down and see if you're going down a little further. And whether one side goes a little better than the other. You see, some of you feel it, some don't. It's always like that. And now stand up, lean on the other knee, on the left knee with both hands, and round your back and arch your back gently and round your back. Look down, arch your back, look up. Do it one more time, round your back, look down, and then arch your back a little bit and look up. Arch your back a little. That's it. And now stand up. Bend your knees a tiny little bit and bend down and see if you go down any further than before. I see quite a few do. Yes? Yes? Sit down. Please. Thank you for going along with me here. How many of you actually felt a difference? Raise your hand. Quite a few. Excellent. Those of you who didn't, don't worry. You still have a brain. That's okay. We just needed to do a little bit more, and it's a very, very quick example. So, what about what we did worked? How come such a quick change can happen? And here come the essentials. And through my work, I have experienced it over and over again, both in myself, but also now with all the thousands of people I've been working with. And I find it to be quite miraculous. And now I have a passion that people will know about it, so it'll be used generally by teachers, therapists, and people in their everyday life. So the first essential that we used in this little exercise is called movement with attention. So first of all, movement is life. we stop moving, we know there's no more life. However, when we are adults, little children move, they do a lot of random movements and movements that are not supposed to serve a specific purpose. So they keep feeding their brain with a lot of new information. When we become adults, again, we go into our patterns. And even when we go to the gym, we get on a treadmill. I go into a gym and I go like, oh my God, I'm going to have work for the rest of my life. Anyway, people walk on a treadmill, great, exercising, great, but it's done mindlessly. People even read a book or watch TV while they do it. So you can count on it that not only your brain is not in a vital create new connections mode, it is grooving in the existing patterns deeper and deeper and deeper. And what happens to us when our brain does not create new possibilities, new connections, is that we start regressing. We do lose connections. So one of the signs of aging is that we start moving in a more and more kind of less and less differentiated way, things, and we shuffle the feet and so on, rather than having things move around and have more freedom. So movement alone is better than no movement. But if you want to get the full-blown capacity for life, then you want to move with attention. Brain research shows, actually brilliant research done with Merzenich and some of his colleagues, is that when we move automatically, no change in the brain, zero. Just the same thing. Actually, the change is the change of less opportunity for something new to happen. There's the opposite happens. The connections get deeper and deeper, and fewer random connections are stay around, hang around to maybe do something new. When we introduce attention to our movement, bang, the brain starts growing new connections like there's no tomorrow. It's a huge, clear difference. So what do with that? How can we introduce it into our daily life? Well, you can choose. Let's say you take a walk. How many of you walk from time to time? Yeah, you do. You walked over here, right? You got here. Yes. So I would like to expand your notion of movement from exercise to movement. Exercise is a very narrow category of movement. Even people who exercise huge amounts exercise 5-6 hours a day. We're alive 24 hours a day. And most of us don't exercise. We don't have time for that. We have to do other things. So think of movement as you, or as Einstein said, until something moves, nothing happens. We move all the time. We need to move. Introduce attention to your movement. So designate, I don't know, in the morning, I don't know, you prepare coffee, make some breakfast, do something. Take 60 seconds to 120 seconds. That means a minute to 2 minutes. And decide to pay attention to your movement. Where is my arm? Where's my pelvis when I move my arm? Where is my head? How does it feel? Paying attention to the movement means a feeling, paying attention to the feeling of the movement. Very, very, very important. For instance, I work, and we are offering it if you're interested. We have the DVDs outside, or you can see it online on my website. And it's a very dramatic example, so I'll tell you that. 8-week-old baby was born with a brachial plexus injury. That's an injury to the nerve that goes from the neck and innervates the shoulder and arm and hand fingers. Pretty serious. It wasn't severed. The nerve itself was still there, but it was sufficiently serious that she was paralyzed. She couldn't move her left arm. She was from L.A. They flew in from L.A. She had 7 weeks of therapy already in a hospital down there, but had no movement in her arm. And I worked with her, and in 6 minutes, she began moving that arm. 6 minutes. If you watch the video, you can actually look at your watch. And I didn't even touch her arm. I didn't need, and I on purpose didn't touch her arm. But I touched her in such a way, and of course that's my expertise, I knew which movements to do, so I called on her brain's attention. Whereas what they did with her in therapy before was they moved her arm, you know, did range of motion and some stimulation. But for the brain, it didn't mean anything because it wasn't already wasn't properly connected to it, and it gets dissociated from it, actually, if it's painful. So I got her spine and her shoulder, ribs and stuff so that the arm started moving passively. I actually moved first the good arm and got her to pay attention to her arm by blowing on it and by playing a game with a healthy arm. Got her full attention, then spent another 60 to 90 seconds on the spine, moving the arm through the spine and the back, and bang, she started moving her arm. It's on video. I mean, I can't make it up. I wouldn't have known. I didn't know it was going to work this well. But it does over and over and over again. So you bring this into your life, and you will get the same kind of outcome. And what happens is not only at the time that you pay attention to your own movement will you feel changes and improvements, but in addition to that, if you keep doing it 2-3 times a day, it's not a lot. It's 6 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day. Your brain will become a better brain all the time, because the quality of the functioning of the brain gets upgraded as you use it in that way. You bring the essentials, you wake it up. Now you can pay attention to your movement when you exercise. How many of you do yoga or Pilates or something intentional? You go to exercise class. Sometimes it's not so easy to do it when you're in a class because you normally classes just move in a bang, 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 and they rush through the exercises. The way I resolve it is I put myself in the very back of the room, and if necessary, I warn the teacher that sometimes I'll be out of sync with the class. And I just take a couple minutes to pay attention, because even the exercises that are they came originally from meditative practices like yoga have been turned very often by our, you know, society into another calisthenics, basically. And calisthenics, for the most part, means do not pay attention to what you're doing. Just try hard and let's hope and pray for the best. So I recommend for you, you're already given an hour or 45 minutes or however much of your day to exercising. Pay some attention. Take little attention breaks but attention moments while you do it. You'll be amazed. I want to expand the thinking of that a little bit more. Movement is not just movement of our limbs and of our body. Thinking is movement. Thinking is definitely movement in the brain. You want to improve your thinking, start paying attention to the movement of your thinking. So, for instance, one of the things that I recognized over the years is that people have patterns of thought. Just like we have patterns of movement, there's certain ways in which we hold our shoulders. So it doesn't matter if I move my hand forward or backward, or if I play violin, or if I caress somebody, I always contract my shoulder muscles a certain way. It's a little less obvious to understand it, but if you give it a moment thought, I'm sure you will. Thinking has patterns. People think in specific patterns. The content changes. The patterns don't change unless you start paying attention to the patterns of your thinking. So how many of you know a person that every time they say something, you feel down after they told you 2 sentences? It's kind of like, oh, God, I thought I was happy today. Now I'm not anymore. And they can talk about buying food, they can talk about what you're wearing, they can talk about anything, and you still, by the end of their talking, you feel like, oh, I'm not feeling as good as I felt a minute ago. Parents tend to do that to their children. We know about that. Ask any child, and they'll tell you, oh, yeah, my dad does it to me this way, my mom does it to me that way. If you think of yourself as a child, you probably have experienced some of that, and if it weren't your parents, you're actually really lucky. But, you know, it's a teacher or somebody like that. It's easier to give a negative example because that's what we usually pay attention to more. But this is a pattern. So if we start looking at the way we formulate our thoughts, the way we formulate the language, that expresses our thoughts, we can start having more freedom in thinking in different ways. So I would recommend for you, you know, to listen to yourself talk. Like, how many of you know that you're going to sit at dinner with people you know and they're actually going to say the same thing over and over again? Maybe we are one of those people. I tend to do this with my daughter, and I so try not to do that. I mean, oh, and she's so quick at catching it. And not only she's quick at catching it, she's like Mercury. When I step out of my habitual patterns with her and I really speak authentically at the moment, she loves me. She wants to talk with me longer. You know, we have a great time. She's 19. She's very bright. She's wonderful. But the moment I fall into some of the old patterns of communication we used to have when she was a teenager or younger, it's like, Mom, I've got to go. I'm real busy. She's polite about it, but she's gone. So she's a great feedback system for me in terms of my thinking. So I pay attention, very close attention, because I want to have a wonderful relationship with her. She's very important to me. Now, we can do that everywhere. Emotions, same thing. How many of you realize that you have patterns of emotion? We actually tend to have the same patterns, configurations of feelings and emotions over and over again. We tend to believe that the cause of those patterns are outside of us. And it's true. Things from outside of us certainly trigger in us, but they trigger in us our patterns. So if we start paying attention to the movement of our emotions, we might have some freedom and say, I don't have to like this or dislike this or feel discouraged or encouraged. I mean, we can have choice. And that is part of being vital, and that's part of being a successful adult, is actually having real choice. So this is just the first essential, movement with attention. The other thing that we did in this little movement exercise that was included, I mean, all of them to some extent, not all of them, but many of them were included. But let me just talk about variation. What I mean by variation is that you do whatever you do in different ways. One way to do variation, and in the anti-aging brain literature tells you, do new things. Go to Italy. Learn to speak Spanish. Try new foods. Very, very good. I mean, I fully recommend that. However, unfortunately, you bring your brain to those activities. And if you have a brain that tends to just repeat itself over and over again, it'll be harder to learn a new language. And when we go and travel around the world, we might find ourselves going to the same Hilton hotel, basically, having the same food, and saying, oh, that reminds me of San Francisco, and that reminds me of Marin County, and that reminds me. How many of us do that? You know, we get into a situation, and it feels like something else already. It feels like something else because it falls, the old patterns catch, and we experience it in our history. We don't experience it in the here and now. Variation is a very easy skill to develop, and it's extremely powerful. So in the lesson you did, I asked you to, you know, I don't know when the last time you tried to touch your toes, but whenever it was, you're probably doing it about the same way now because that's what you figured out, right? So you bend down to touch your toes. And then what would people normally do in an attempt to touch their toes better? What's the usual thing? What? Bend the legs, that means you're smart. But if what most people do, if it was really important to touch your toes, bend your knees and touch your toes, right? If you needed to reach down. But if it's an exercise thing, people actually try to keep their knees straight if they can. Stretch. People are told stretch. I'll talk to you about stretch in a minute. It's one of the big falsehoods because there is no such function in the muscles called stretching, by the way. But instead, what I told you is bend just part way. You see, by leaning on your hands, I made sure all of you don't bend all the way down as far as you can. And then I told you to bend round your back and arch your back. These are variations. You're bent down, and you're doing something a little different. It can be called mistakes, right? Little mistakes, intentional mistakes. Most of you many of you couldn't really bend down because of the chairs in front, but most of you that could, you felt a difference. Then I gave you slightly different variation. When you put both your hands on one over one knee, it just twists the body a little bit to the side. It's a minor little variation. But let me tell you, the brain has trillions of brain cells and connections. And any of you who knows mathematics, you do one little change in trillions of connections, it can completely revolutionize the whole system. That's what this is based on. So then you do it to the other knee, you twist the other way. It's another little variation. If I had you for another 4 minutes, I'll give you another 4 variations, and you would have 4 more improvements. Very short story. I was in Germany, Freiburg, working with the world, renowned cellist in one of the world best quartets, and he was getting pains in his shoulders and arms, and it was really interfering with his ability to play. And he was, of course, also very, very concerned. It's his livelihood. It's his life. And it was in a workshop setting. Doesn't matter all the details. So I had an hour to work with him. And very often I work with people. I have lied them down, and I start working with my hands. So I did that with him, and I could see he was impatient. He didn't understand what the hell I was doing with him. So I thought, I'm going to lose him completely if I don't get something going now. So I said to him, why don't you sit up? Let's stop this. I had to do variation in my own way of doing things. And I said, take the cello, play for me something. So he played a couple of phrases from a Schubert quartet. Beautiful, just gorgeous. I feel always like I get a private concert. I like that. Then I said to him, okay, you're obviously a fantastic cello player, but I had a chance to observe him. He had a very rigid, very specific way of playing, and from my experience, I've worked with hundreds of musicians, I could see that that was learned in very early childhood. Somebody told him, hold the bow this way, that's the right way to play, and that's how you're going to do it. And he did it. Except by being so rigid, he has no way to self-correct. So over time, it eats away at the joints and so on. He had pain. I said to him, okay, now play for me Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, the first, two phrases of Little Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. He looked at me shocked. You know, one of the best cellists in the world, I asked him to play Twinkle, Twinkle. I said, just hang in there with me. And he played it, and of course it was perfect. So then I said to him, would you do me a favor, play it badly. So then he was really surprised, which was great because his brain was going new places. Nobody ever asked him in his life to play badly. I can guarantee you that. So I said, play badly. So I had to cajole him a little bit, and he played it badly. Something, right? I said, that was perfect. I said, now play badly, just in a different way. He got interested. He had to think. I said, you have little students, they play badly, just to imitate their bad ways of playing. So he played badly in another way, a third way, a fourth way. When I asked him to play badly a fifth way, he couldn't figure it out. I said, okay, we did well enough. I said, now go back, play me the Schubert. It was pain-free. Because those 4 or 5 different ways of playing badly flooded his brain, liberated him, flooded his brain with new information. And it just rearranged his body. I wouldn't have known how to correct his body. And even if I had, I can't do it from outside. It has to be done by the body itself, by the brain itself. So that's an example of variations. So do some little variations. Brush your teeth with your right hand. Brush it with the left hand. You see, I'm wearing my watch now on my right hand. I wanted to test how long does it take me before I look at my left hand every time I want to see the time. And then what I did was I decided to accelerate that, and I jumped to this essential that's called awareness. I realized that if I, actually more than awareness, before awareness, imagination. I said, okay, just close your eyes on that and just visualize and imagine the watch on your right wrist. Now imagine yourself looking at the time. Now imagine yourself sitting by the TV and looking at the time. Now imagine, and I moved myself in my imagination to a few situations and imagined myself, because I was doing it intentionally, I could control it, looking at the right wrist instead of the left wrist. My number of mistakes dropped by about 80%. From 100% mistakes, like 10 out of 10, I looked at the left wrist instead of the right. I thought, this is ridiculous. I have to be able to do better than that. And now I make a mistake once, maybe every 20 times. When I get really busy or fast, I drop still back into the old habit. So that is another essential that I didn't directly use in this little exercise, but I use it a lot when I teach movement. I have people imagine moving, then imagine, and the speed of change is just magnificent. So the next one that we used is what I call subtlety, reducing the force. Huge one. When we move with force, be it physical or emotional, or by the way, thinking-wise, when people have like real strong opinions, real rigid ideas, we can be aware of it, but what happens is the force reduces our sensitivity. We cannot feel fine differences. And the information the brain works with is the perception of differences. It's not perception. You know, I'm a clinical psychologist. I learned psychology in Jerusalem University, Tel Aviv University, all this stuff. So there's a whole subject and books, perception. But there is no book says perception of differences. And it was through working with people and through having to literally save the lives of children, I thought, when I work with people and they're intelligent, but then they act like they're not really there. And I thought, what's going on? And I thought, people will do what they do until they perceive a difference, and then they might do something different. Our ability to perceive differences actually defines how alive, vital, awake, and intelligent we are. So if I'm going to walk towards a door, but I don't perceive the difference between the wood and the wall, I'm very likely to bang myself into the wall. How many of you experiencing banging yourself figuratively into the wall of life over and over and over again, right? A few of you raised your hand. The other ones are just really lucky, or you're not perceiving the difference of what I'm talking about here. Or you're too tired to lift your arm. I don't know. Anyway, the ability of the nervous system to perceive differences is the basis of intelligence, it's the basis of learning, it's the basis of vitality. And one of the things that we lose as we age is the readiness to feel differences. People are losing stability, you know, balance as they age, not because there is a balanced place in their brain that shuts down. Balance is actually doesn't exist anywhere. What happens is that the information coming from the feet that tells us where we are and if the floor is flat or straight or if there's a bump, it requires a bigger difference before we feel it. So we can't self-correct quickly enough. That's why putting those rubber things with bumps on them, the plastic insoles that have little bumps on them, they discovered unintentionally that it improves people's balance. And they gave it an explanation, which I don't remember what it is, but it's the wrong one. What I think really happens is that when you put in the insoles, all of a sudden the stimulation is intensified and you start not paying conscious attention, but you start feeling what comes from your feet. The more you're sensitive and able to perceive fine differences, the more information your brain has to work with. So if you want to improve your flexibility or your strength in your body and you go and you exercise, the first thing to do is to reduce the force with which you move. Counterintuitive against what everybody will tell you in exercise classes, but you know, they used to say that the earth is flat. So it doesn't mean that what they all say is true, because one person said it and then everybody else heard it and says it again. So it's not like everybody thought it through from the beginning. It's just the flat stomach thing. Actually, a huge mistake. You pull your belly in. You hold it in all the time powerfully. First of all, it makes you less sensitive to what's happening in the area of your pelvis. There is this great effort happening all the time. Any one of you here knows physiology, neurology, some anatomy, your doctors, you know that the muscles work. It's called antagonism, but it's really in synchronization. So if the front muscles are working in the belly, the back muscles can't work very well. So guess what you're doing? You're weakening your back. And you're getting rigid, and you're interfering with your breathing, and you listen to a silly exercise teacher that learned it somewhere. She's pretty, she's flexible, you listen to her. That's not a good enough reason. So, reducing the force is another essential. when you, I like giving this example, if you have employees or if you have teenagers at home or, you know, children, when we try to convince them emotionally about doing something, we tend to up the force with which we bring in. Familiar? Anybody agrees with me? Yes, yes? Yeah. You reduce the force, you back off, you will start noticing things in yourself and in them that will give you the basis for enormous inventiveness in how you communicate or decide not to communicate, the timing of your communication. You'll become creative because you'll start perceiving subtleties. This gentleman smiles at me so beautifully. I could just talk for 5 hours here if you just keep smiling at me like that. This is wonderful. And so this, and also emotions, I mean, I believe all of you know, when we get really, really angry, we get really, really intense emotions, there's very little we can do with it, right? When I am a big one for having the full range of emotions in our life, because I believe there's a big, big part of our vitality and the full range of our feelings. But the forcefulness with which we do it interferes with our vitality. So the trick is to feel them fully, but not in a forceful way. So there's just a lot of things you could do. And I think I'll say one more thing before I open it up to questions, and then feel free to ask me anything you want. The last essentials in the book is awareness. And awareness is, I believe, a unique human quality that has to do with how our brain is and how big our brain is. I think it's actually an outcome of the size and the way our brain works. What makes us uniquely human, and something that if we don't do it, we are not truly as human and humane as we could be. And awareness, people talk about awareness, consciousness, they talk about it as a thing, like states of consciousness. It's like rooms in a house. Awareness is an action. This is something we can do or not do. So if I am now going to ask you, and by the way, for awareness you need attention, but attention is not automatically awareness. So if I'm asking you now to feel, become aware whether the pressure through your buttocks when you're sitting on a chair, is it equal or is one buttock a little different than the other? You all did it, right? Anybody here couldn't do it? You wouldn't be here if you wouldn't be able to do it, right? The pressure on your feet when you stand, is it equal or different? Don't look at them. You feel it. You can't see it. You can look at your shoes and see if they're as clean and shiny, the one as the other. So awareness is an action. It's something that we can decide to bring more and more into our life. And let me tell you, people, the more they have awareness, the more they're pristine, the more they're magnificent, the more we want to be around them. So if you look at somebody like the Dalai Lama, he's a man of great awareness. He trained through meditation, his own ways of doing it. And of course, I have my ways of helping people to get it to it. You don't have to go and meditate for 20 years to get that. I like to start it right now, right here. And it's a skill, just like any other skill. So all of you have skills. You cook, you you have professions. You have all kinds of things you do. You've all developed skills. Awareness is a skill to develop. And develop and develop. In Hebrew, which is my original language, there's a word that's called shichlul. It's S-H-I-C-H-L-U-L. And it doesn't exist in English, doesn't exist in French. I don't speak other languages. And what it means is improvement through increased complexity. Improvement through increased complexity. Not complicatedness, but complexity. And what the human brain does, when it does what it's built to do, it creates new connections and new patterns that are more refined and more complex. It gets richer and richer and richer. It becomes a more complex system. So to be vital, to have more health, to keep regenerating flexibility and power, both of body and mind, we actually need to continue increasing the complexity of the brain. There isn't a level of complexity at which we are there and we're going to be fine. It's the actual process of increasing the complexity that gives us our health and well-being. And I figured that out because I've been working now for many years, as I mentioned. And I would have large groups of people, and I would give, you know, just now I finished teaching 9-day course. I have 80 people on the floor. And I tell them, do this, do that. And 80 people, 80 different ways of doing it, first of all. That's because we have such a complex brain. And about 80% of them are not doing a great job. I let them. As long as they don't hurt themselves, they go slowly, they go gently. I do variations. I know it's going to work. I give them another very, you know, and I do a whole, let's say, 45-minute movement lesson. Some of them at the end can do the final movement very easily. Some of them can do just a small portion of it. All of them get up and do a lot better. So I realized you don't have to achieve the final goal to get the benefit. It's the process. It's through the quality of participation in the process that you will vitalize yourself, you will feel better. And one thing I can tell you, whether my theory is accurate or inaccurate, even though all current brain science, you know, validates what I say, I know one thing, it works. So it's worth doing it. So thank you, and I'll open it for questions. Thank you.
Our special thanks to Anat Baniel for her comments here today at the Commonwealth Club of California. Again, my name is Dr. David Okola, the chairperson of Personal Growth Forum, and I'm moderating today's audience question period. Does anybody have any of these question things filled out? Could one of the helpers grab the questions and bring them up to the front? Thank you.
Take this one.
I have a question, and that is that how can I get stronger with your attention method?
Yes. Okay, the way to get stronger, who asked this question, if you don't mind raising the hand? Oh, is that your question? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you read it from the paper. No.
Not yet.
So stronger in what way? What do you mean by stronger? In which respect?
In all aspects, the core muscles. And
okay. Well, the way to get stronger with the muscles, it's a bit like the girl with brachial plexus injury that I talked about. You want your brain to tell those muscles to work. So I'll tell a short thing, and then I'll go right back to you. So when people have, let's say, knee surgery, the kind of therapy, the traditional that is done, one of them, for instance, is to put weights on the ankle and to have them bend and straighten, you know, the leg with an attempt to strengthen the thigh muscles. And anybody who is a therapist or had this kind of surgery knows that very often it doesn't work very well. So what you need is you need to use these essentials. Let's say you want to strengthen your abdomen muscles, right, and so on. I would suggest to do movements, whatever you do, and start, do it slower, do it with less force, and start introducing variation so that your brain wakes up to the fact that it has muscles there. You see, you can do move your belly a certain way, but you're just doing what you've always done, and about 80% of what could work is actually not working, and you don't know that. And you have no way to decide which muscles are or aren't working, and you can't tell your brain to do it. There is no direct way to get the outcome. There's only a way of doing, for me, at least in my experience, these essentials, and very quickly the brain picks up, oh, my God, I could do this too. Oh, you start feeling what you have there. And I didn't talk much about the flexible goals, but whatever you want to do, don't try to reach it and harp on it and harp on it and harp on it. So if you want stronger belly muscles, do a little for the belly, a little for the back, do some stuff for the shoulders, and you'll come back to the belly and you'll find that the belly is working better.
Okay.
Okay?
Excellent. Thank you. And here's another question. Is there more hope than for stroke victims whose limbs are impacted negatively?
Huge amount of hope. Huge amount. More than hope. I mean, there's a real possibility. So I'll give you a very extreme example. Part of it has to do with how soon you get to do these things with the stroke victim. My husband's partner, 48 years old, had a very severe stroke to the frontal lobes. And they didn't even know if he would be able to stay alive. He was on a breathing machine and, you know, pretty bad. 3 days, 2-3 days after the stroke, they were able to stabilize him, and I went there myself and brought one of my practitioners. It was down in Redwood City, so I couldn't go there for Marine every day, and I knew he needed somebody to go there for about 10-15 minutes twice a day. So I asked my practitioner, Beth, and I said, would you collaborate with me? And she said, yes. And we went to the hospital. It was fantastic because we waited for a while. We got the neurologist, and I said, can I do my work? He said, is this alternative? I said, yes. He said, fine. I said, this is California, right? So perfect. And what I told her to do with him, because he was unconscious and they kept him unconscious because he was, you know, thrashing with his arms and things like that. And I said to her, don't try to make him do any specific exercise, but see if you can get an echo back from the brain. So, for instance, if you work on somebody's toes very gently, if you touch them and move them very gently, you'll see that the toes of the other foot start moving after a while. There is a transfer of the information from one side of the brain to the other. Because when people have a stroke, it's a massive trauma to the brain. And part of the problem is not just the trauma, but it's the fact that the brain, so to speak, doesn't recognize itself anymore. And very quickly, it settles into its new form, its new situation. This man, not only when she worked on him, his breathing would improve because the machines are there. They're measuring it. And he needed less medication to sedate him. So she came twice a day, every time for about 10, 15 minutes, for about 10 days. The nurses started seeing what was happening, so I asked if they would agree to simply stop the sedation a little bit before she came here, there, so he wouldn't be sedated, he'd respond more to the work. In 2 weeks, they took him off the machine, they took him off the IVs, and he sat up and he walked to the bathroom. He had some degree of aphasia, you know, where the language was still a little, but his thinking was clear. It was very, very extreme. I've never had a stroke patient that close to the event. But yes, and even those who come to us after 2-3 years, we can help them, but it's not as profound. It's like you build on top of the existing patterns. But yes, huge amount. Rather than exercising muscles, you want to wake up that brain. Yes, there is a lot to do. And if you know anybody that has a stroke or gets a stroke or anything, I always tell my teachers, I say, if anything happens to me, you come and work with me within an hour after the incident, not any longer than that. By the way, also true for spinal trauma. Very, very, I mean, unless it's completely severed. Yep.
Which essentials contribute most towards higher energy?
It's very hard to say because, you know, I don't really separate. I work with all of them. But if you were to focus on a few, I say movement with attention is very important because movement is the primary information feeder to the brain. So movement is the first. And then of the ones I talked, I would say movement, variation, reducing the effort, and bringing intentional enthusiasm into your life. Enthusiasm, just like awareness, is an action rather than a reaction. Find something right now, at this moment as I talk to you, to be really enthusiastic about. Whether you like this lecture or you don't like it, whether you're interested and bored, find something to be enthusiastic about. And I promise you that almost in every single situation, there's something you can find something to be enthusiastic about. And you know what that does? That wakes your brain up. Those four, you do those, you're gonna feel the difference within a day. Email me and yell at me if you don't. Yes.
The Feldenkrais method and the Alexander technique both seem to support your method. Can you please comment on the two schools of movement technique?
Okay, so both Feldenkrais method and the Alexander technique are very, very valuable. A lot of the principles that I speak about are embedded in those methods. I personally trained as a very young person with Dr. Feldenkrais, and I traveled with him as I was in grad school. So I have my initial knowledge about this kind of work came from working very closely with Dr. Feldenkrais. And as I continued working over the years and the children and the musicians, all that stuff, I formulated it in my own terms and my own way. I believe that these are very valuable methods.
A tortoise was mugged on his way to work.
Sorry, I couldn't understand.
A tortoise was mugged on his way to work by two snails. At the police station, the tortoise was asked a description of the criminals. Because the tortoise could not... he said that everything happened too fast. That's why he couldn't describe it. There's really no question there. This someone handed me this, and I thought we'll just throw some new information.
Well, I think is it, who wrote it? Is that somebody that agrees with what I said or has a question? Okay. Oh, you just wrote it down. Yeah, you heard the tortoise. I think it's a great one. You know, with children, now again, there's research that validates it, and there's all kind of technologies that are developed on computers now to help children that have difficulties learning to read and write. And there's any number of reasons and ways in which that happens. But one of the things that I discovered with a lot of the kids that had real issues, genetic or birth trauma and so on, when it came time for them to try and help them learn to read and write, it was done fast. Even for my child in school, you know, math, you know, they timed them. They give them 100 problems to solve in 20 minutes. I went to her school and I said to the teacher, do you think Einstein, when he developed relativity theory, was watching, looking at his watch? He says, oh, if I don't develop it in half an hour, it's not worth it. I mean, it's about the capacity to do it. It's not about how fast. You want fast computation, go to a computer, right? So only by slowing down what I do with people, very often there's a breakthrough like that because it was always just a bit too fast for the brain to process. Then if you slow down, I say to people, I say, fast you can only do what you already know. Remember that. Fast, you can only do what you already know. So if you just want to do what you've already done over and over again, every day, every night, everything, want to have the same life you have yesterday, tomorrow, I mean, that's fine. I don't think so, really, because you're going to deteriorate pretty fast. Slow gets the brain's attention and gives you the opportunity to, again, perceive differences, discover, invent, and revitalize yourself. Okay, thank you so much for listening. I really, really appreciate your coming out, and I hope you found it valuable. And I'll be signing the book in the back, Moving to Life, if you're interested in purchasing it. And for anybody who wants to learn more, I have a very big website, AnnatBanielMethod.com. You can read a lot about the work. Okay, thank you very much.
Again, our special thanks to Anat Banielle for her comments here today. Today's presentation was called Move Into Life, the 9 Essentials for Lifelong Vitality. Let's put our hands together one more time and give another pause for this enlightened comments here today. We also like to thank our audience here at the club and as well as our radio audience at home. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion, is now adjourned.